You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me for Blue Friday, my co-host, Nick Lee. It's Wild Card Eve. We've got six playoff games coming up Saturday and Sunday. The Seahawks taking on the Rams at Lumen Field on Saturday. Jam-packed show coming your way. We're going to look at some keys to a Seahawks victory. How can they advance to the divisional round and beat the Rams for the second time in 3 weeks? And plus, we'll have some bold predictions for this upcoming game and some of our favorite memories from past wild card contests for the Seahawks. This episode is brought to you by Top 10. Top 10 is an exclusive collection of 10 one-of-a-kind engagement rings designed by 10 of the most distinctive designers working today. Using only diamonds responsibly and sustainably sourced from Botswana, 10 design masters have each produced a uniquely beautiful diamond ring, launching exclusively on January 18th at BlueNile.com. This exciting limited edition collection of diamond engagement rings launches on January 18th, and you can preview it exclusively at BlueNile.com. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. We've got a bunch of exciting wildcard games coming up starting in less than 24 hours. The Seahawks slated to play the Rams at Lumen Field. And there are so many great memories over the years, Nick, when we're talking about the Seahawks in the wildcard round. And it's really fitting how many crazy plays that there have been during the Pete Carroll era, because we know the Seahawks just don't. They don't know how to play normal games.
No, I mean, they don't. And it's been like that for years and years, even before Pete Carroll. And I admittedly, I'm a true 12 in the sense that I really became, followed the Seahawks very, very closely at about 2011, 2012, based on my merit choice of who I married and where we moved. But my history and my background of maybe at least pre Holmgren era is very, very limited at best. So as far as wild card moments, I think we can both agree, Corbin, that probably the number one wild card weekend moment in Seahawks history has to be the Beastquake. I mean, that is just iconic on so many levels. And it's the number one play in Seahawks wild card history, I think, for me. Not only did it help the Seahawks win the game against the defending Super Bowl champion Saints after no one gave them a shot at 7-9. It was the ushering in of a new Seahawks era of football. I mean, the Seattle was always respected for their loud fans, but this was a different level. I mean, it registered on the Richter scale, and the product on the field now they actually had a product on the field that fueled the fire for the crowd. And instead of being bullied, the Seahawks now became the bully, starting with that play. And for the next 4, 5, 6 years after that, or at least the next after that play and moving on to 2012 and on, the Seahawks were one of the most feared teams in all of football because of that Beastquake ushering in the era of them as the bullies.
Yeah, and it's one of the greatest, if not the greatest run in NFL history. And so for it to happen in a playoff game just further added to the lore. And so I go back and I watch that play. I can't tell you how many times I've watched the replay of that, because it's just always fun to try to count how many guys Marshawn Lynch either ran over or stiff-armed. It's debated. It's debated because, you know, there's been a couple of them where he barely touched the guy. So they're like, well, I don't know if I want to count that. I always count them because it was an epic run. And always hearing Mike Mayock as the color commentator going, whoa, after he stiff-armed. I believe that was Greer was the one that he just threw like 10 yards downfield. And it's such an iconic play. But the thing is, we would be remiss not to mention a number of other plays, a lot of them being in the Pete Carroll era in the wild card round. There's so many great memories. I know you're going to go before the Carroll era for the one that always stands out to you, but I'm going to go to the one that I saw in person outside when it was -6 degrees actual temperature in Minnesota. And Doug Baldwin somehow made a one-handed reception in the middle of the field, in traffic. It is one of the best catches I've ever seen when you consider the elements in that game, how cold it was, the wind chill made it even colder, for him to go up with one hand and snag a pass. And I mean, the Seahawks passing game couldn't do anything that day, in part because it was just so difficult to throw the ball in those cold conditions. That was an incredible play, one of the best catches that I have ever seen.
Yeah, that game, you know, for a 10-9 game in the Ice Bowl was pretty action packed. It was the third coldest playoff game in NFL history. And it was just amazing to watch for me. I needed an extra blanket to watch that game from my TV, just how cold it looked outside. And that was a key first down that Doug Baldwin got. And that game had a lot. And I would go as well. On fourth quarter down 9-0. And, you know, when you're down two scores in a game like that, where it's just really frigid and cold, I mean, that game had the Doug Baldwin catch, but also that botched snap with Russell Wilson goes over his head. And the immediate reaction is, okay, the Seahawks are down 9-0 in the fourth quarter. So two scores, the ball gets snapped over Wilson's head. This game is teetering on being over at that point. And of course, Russell Wilson does what Russell Wilson does and finds Tyler Lockett for an incredible, just truly iconic and vintage Russell Wilson play.
And Tyler Lockett got inside the 5-yard line and they scored a few plays later. So that was critical. As you mentioned, when you're down 9 points in a game like that, it feels like you're down 30 because it's so hard to move the football in those conditions. And that really was a game-changing play. As we know, Blair Walsh at the end missing that field goal so the Seahawks could move on to the second round. The other play that always jumps out to me was the last time the Seahawks were the number 3 seed, actually, when they played the Detroit Lions. Paul Richardson made an incredible touchdown catch where he had a defender draped all over him. And yes, he had his hands on the defender's face mask, but I think he was just more protecting himself than anything else with the way the defender was interfering with him. And for him to still be able to reach around with his left hand and catch the football, it was one of the better catches that I've seen in a playoff game. And the Seahawks just have so many illustrious plays in these wild card games, but that was one that is always going to jump out to me just because of the degree of difficulty. And it was just such a unique play, the way that it unfolded. And you just don't see receivers grab the defender's face mask like that, just kind of holding on for his dear life and then holding onto the football. And both guys were wrestling for position there. And so I think that's why the officials did not throw a flag, but it was one of the better catches that I've seen. I think we have to mention to close this out, though, and I'm going to give the floor to you here, the play that still, for Dallas Cowboys fans, lives in infamy.
Yeah, I mean, Tony Romo, I mean, he was a great player for the Cowboys, and really he had some great moments in Dallas, but this is probably, yes, a day that will always live in infamy in Dallas Cowboys lore. I actually wasn't a fan yet, like I mentioned, in 2006, but I was rooting for the Seahawks actively because I was grown to hate the Cowboys as the son of an Eagles fan. And so I was definitely watching that with an interest. And the underrated part of that game was the review of Jason Witten's catch before and when it was ruled short, which caused the field goal attempt. And so when I said that's the field goal attempt. And when Romo took the snap and botched it, he actually had a pretty wide open angle to get into the end zone, or at least a first down, that weird like yard between the first down and end zone line. And who comes in? Jordan Babineau comes out of nowhere and makes a game-winning, season-changing, season-saving tackle, a shoestring tackle of Tony Romo. And just the iconic image of Tony Romo sitting there with his hands on his face mask, just another wild, weird, spooky thing that happened in that end zone. For some reason, that specific end zone has caused so many different wild plays. And I think maybe it even started with that play. I think that was maybe the start of the juju.
Yeah, I think that's the play that kind of started that movement. And it stinks for Tony Romo because I think he was a way better quarterback than he's going to be given credit for by a lot of people. Now that he's been retired now for a few years, he's an outstanding announcer. But that was just the first of many games where the Cowboys had something crazy happen that caused them to choke, and he was at the center of that one, and they just couldn't win playoff games. They had several really good teams when he was the starting quarterback, and they could never get over the hump, and the Cowboys just haven't been able to win many playoff games. And so that's one that Cowboys fans, you're really putting salt in the wound when you bring that one up.
Eventually ended Tony Romo's career, basically.
Yeah, it is what it is. I mean, he's had some really rough moments at CenturyLink Field and then Quest Field back then. I mean, regardless of what the name's been, Romo had some difficult moments there. But when we come back in the second quarter, we're going to shift to the present because we've got a wild card game coming up tomorrow. Seahawks and Rams playing at Lumen Field. Second matchup between these two rivals in 3 weeks. We're going to look at keys to victory for the Seahawks. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody and are reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear like airlines do. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique, remarkably easy to navigate, and all the parts are available for your vehicle. Choose the brand, specifications, and prices you prefer. Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write "Locked in their "How did you hear about us" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Blue Friday edition. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, joined by Nick Lee. Betting on the NFL doesn't have to be a guessing game if you listen to the new Locked On Bets podcast hosted by your boy Q and handicapping expert Lee Sterling. Get daily picks and quick-hitting advice to make the smartest possible wagers. Subscribe to the Locked On Bets podcast brought to you by BetOnline.ag, wherever you get podcasts. We've got a big game coming up at Lumen Field tomorrow, the first playoff game since the stadium's been renamed. The Seahawks are 5-0 in that stadium during the playoffs in the Pete Carroll era, so they're going to look to remain undefeated playing at home in the postseason with Carroll on the sidelines. Nick, let's talk keys to victory here. This is kind of going to be a strange game when we get to the defensive side of the football, but let's start on offense where I think the game plan – The keys to victory are far simpler going into this rematch.
Well, and of course, the Seahawks just defeated the Rams not 2 weeks ago for the division title. And it's kind of always, I think this comes up a lot in baseball when you play teams so often. It's hard to have a different game plan when you win a big matchup against a team than you play them again in the playoffs because, like, okay, well, what we did was what worked and we won the game. But what is the other team doing to adjust to change the result? So you kind of maybe have some gamesmanship there and you don't want to out yourself. So what stick with what works? And last against the Rams, what didn't work was the pass protection. You got to clean that up against those stunts. And it really wasn't a lot of Aaron Donald just being a game wrecker. I mean, yes, he had his moments, but Leonard Floyd led the game with 2 sacks. And it seemed like Russell Wilson saw some ghosts briefly in a couple of instances where he had a pocket, but then kind of looked like he thought he didn't. And it took the ball too early. So you got to sustain drives. And that's a vital part because we all assume the Rams are probably going to be looking to score a touchdown this time. and so the offense for the Seahawks is definitely going to have to keep up and sustain drives. And nothing kills drives, maybe aside from penalties, more than sacks. And Russell Wilson, we all know, tends to sometimes, maybe in the playoffs especially, try to play a little hero ball, try to hold onto the ball too much, and that can cause not some sacks, but some very big loss on sacks. So clean up that pass protection, I think, is priority number one on offense.
Yeah, the stunts in particular, they've had issues with those. The first matchup between these teams, Leonard Floyd had 3 sacks, and I think 2 of them came off of stunts. And so their pass protection, they've got to do a better job communicating on those. I do think it's a big deal. They're going to have all 5 of their starters up front for the first time since week 14. And with that experience being back in the lineup, that should help them in this regard. But to me, that's number one. You have got to do a better job protecting your quarterback against those stunts. When they've just straight up been bringing 3 or 4-man rushes, it seems like the line's been able to do okay. Aaron Donald's had his moments. He's going to. He's a Hall of Famer. But you've got to be able to protect against those stunts a little bit better, keep your quarterback clean. And when Wilson is clean, he can't miss open receivers. He's got to be decisive. And We saw it in the San Francisco game last week. We've seen a lot in the second half. It just seems like there have been receivers that have been getting open, and he's just not unloading the football. He has got to be able to take advantage of those opportunities because of the pass rush that the Rams have. And I'm going to add this, and you wrote an article about it yesterday. Get your tight ends involved if you have to, because your corners on the outside the Rams have, Ramsey and Williams, are really, really good. And so you need to take advantage of your secondary targets against this defense. I like those tight ends against the Rams linebackers, especially if Micah Kizer plays in this game. He's a big hitter, but he doesn't move very well. Let your tight ends make an impact. They did in that last matchup. Hollister had a touchdown. He should have had two, but Wilson overthrew one of them. So get those tight ends involved. And I think that opens up things for your wide receivers on the outside.
And then getting more to like the on the interior, the run game certainly needs to be emphasized, because the one thing that will, I think that we all agree, that's things that translate into playoff games is a good run game. The Seahawks average, I believe, is about 4 yards a carry in this recent matchup against the Rams, 24 rushes for 95 yards and a touchdown. And that really helped them kind of, you know, weather the storm a little bit with some ineptness on offense. but it's going to be really come down to the trenches, and that's cliche, but the run game is going to be an important part of this. And I think the Seahawks might try to get a little creative with continuing that. It doesn't need to be ISO, you know, bludgeon them with Chris Carson up the middle 20 times. Let's get a bit more creative and maybe take a page out of the Rams book. The Rams are a pretty good running team, but it is not just, you know, the ground and pound, you know, fullback, all that stuff. It's a bit more exotic looks. And sweet. I think the Seahawks, yeah, exactly. And I think that the Seahawks can maybe take a page out of their book, but they definitely need to get the run game involved, because that is going to set up the play action, which is, again, we all agree, can that is where Russell Wilson is at his most dangerous. And that will open up some things even downfield, is if that run game becomes effective, they're going to be forced to bring more and more people closer to the line. And that's where you can take that big shot. And you never know when that big shot, especially in a game I think that's going to be as close as this game is, that could be a game decider.
Yeah, the run game is going to be big just to try to slow down some of those guys up front. And they've had success in the past running against this team. It's been a little different with Brandon Staley as the coordinator, because they've still got a really good run defense, even though they play light in the box a lot of the time. They schematically do a really good job positioning themselves to stop the run and the talent they've got up front. So I don't know, this is a game where you're going to want to run it 30-plus times, but you need to have that run game going to be able to keep your quarterback afloat a little bit and have some offensive balance. The last thing that I want to add really quick, respect Jalen Ramsey, but don't fear him. And what I mean by that is Jalen Ramsey is an outstanding player. He's one of the best corners in football. You aren't going to just test him just to test him, because he will make you pay if you do that. But DK Metcalf beat him downfield two or three times in the first game they played in week 10. He had a couple plays that he got separation on him in the last game in week 16. Metcalf is a superstar in his own right. You cannot just avoid throwing the ball to him when Ramsey's across from him. And so Russell Wilson, again, respect Jalen Ramsey. You're not going to be targeting him 90 times in the game, but don't fear him to the point that you're not willing to take some of those deep shots to your best wide receiver. And I think that's going to be big. I think DK Metcalf is going to have a chance or two in this game if Russell Wilson is able to see him and get the ball off and the protection holds up, that they can get the ball to him downfield working against Ramsey. Again, a must-see matchup between those two. Now, on defense, Nick, we're looking at a far different situation, because we don't know who's playing quarterback for the Rams yet. We won't know till tomorrow, most likely, whether it's going to be Jared Goff, who's listed as questionable coming off thumb surgery, or backup John Wolford, who is going to present a little different style of quarterback than the Seahawks are used to seeing from the Rams. He's much more mobile. He's got a good arm in the short to intermediate game, but he's not going to beat you typically downfield. He doesn't have the long ball arm that maybe Jared Goff has, but it's really going to impact the way that you choose to pressure and what you choose to do with your coverage strategies, depending on who's playing quarterback.
Yeah, pardon the pun, but it's a wild card at this point to plan on the quarterbacks, because they are pretty different. Wolford, like you mentioned, certainly adds a running element. Goff clearly does not want to run the football. I think that was very clear in that game against the Seahawks. There were several times where he had at least 6, 7, 8 yards, and at times like a first down in front of him if he just tucked and ran, and refused, and at one point cost him a turnover, and he hesitated in space a few weeks ago. So sometimes that could have extended a drive or even led to a score. Wolford has really nothing to lose. He has, you know, he doesn't have a giant contract. He's trying to protect himself, or, you know, he doesn't really have that starting job to risk on the line. He's putting his body on the line, and clearly he did that against the Cardinals, which really could pose a problem for Seattle. I think that a guy playing with nothing to lose like Wolford would could be dangerous, especially with that running element. So I think getting pressure, because anytime you face an inexperienced quarterback, getting consistent pressure will always swing the advantage in your direction. And even with Jared Goff does not handle pressure well either. But I think what the word of caution here is focus on creating pressure, manufacturing pressure with your four-man, three-four-man fronts. I think if you get a little too cute with blitzes and get a little blitz happy, that's when a guy like Goff, if those blitzes are picked up, he is a good enough quarterback to pick that apart. And so maybe with Wolford, you maybe get a bit more aggressive with that. But I think that the Seahawks really need to find a way to manufacture pressure just with their 3-4 man fronts.
Yeah, I think if you've got Wolford out there, it's interesting because if you blitz him more, there's more of a likelihood that he's going to find a way to escape. And then you could have your issues with a mobile quarterback being able to get some big yardage. But at the same time, you mentioned the inexperience with him. I think if you can get him off his spot and you can force him into some throws, then you might be able to generate a couple quick turnovers as well. And so I think the 3-4 man pressures was what was working in week 16. And they didn't blitz Jamal Adams very much in that game. I think he only blitzed 3 times against the Rams in week 16. So I like the idea. Don't get too cute with your blitzing. If you've got Wolford out there, maybe you can be a bit more aggressive. And maybe they'll blitz a little more in this game just because you said teams are going to adapt. The Rams are going to make their adjustments. The Seahawks might counter that with being a bit more aggressive. We'll have to see. But I think you got to be really careful there because Goff can pick you apart. If you present those situations, he's able to get the football out of his hands. As far as coverage goes, I talked about this on the show earlier this week. If Wolford's out there, I think you're going to have a little more of an emphasis on let's really force him to beat us downfield. Let's kind of, the receivers here are one-on-one on the outside. Take your shot. We don't believe that you can beat us that way. If Jared Goff's out there, you can't quite handle it that way because he does have a bigger arm. But I certainly think that they're going to be having more emphasis on playing tighter coverage in the middle of the field because that's where Wolford seems to be at his best, that short to intermediate game. And that's going to open up those opportunities downfield potentially, but are the Rams going to be able to take advantage of it? So it's just two different quarterbacks, and I think it is going to impact the strategy a little bit for how the Seahawks play their coverage, how they pressure. And as always against the Rams, it's all about contain, especially if you've got a mobile quarterback back there. We know that they like to stretch the field with their horizontal runs. They'll do their jet sweeps with Robert Woods and Reynolds, and they'll get their running backs out on sweeps as well. They'll get their bubble screen game going. So you've got to be able to contain and hold the edge when you play this team. I thought they did a really good job of that in the first two matchups, in particular week 16. But the Rams, you know, are going to go back to that, and they're going to try to stretch the Seahawks out horizontally, and then they can have some success running between the tackles, especially with Cam Akers being back healthy.
We all know Sean McVay's not an idiot. He didn't become an idiot overnight. He's gonna game plan. He probably has had lots of restless nights between that game against the Seahawks in week 16 and now figuring out how to create problems for the Seahawks on defense. And yeah, contain is certainly the C word here for the Seahawks, especially with the running quarterback. Like I mentioned, if Wolford really has no news, that the Seahawks have had trouble with rushing with mobile quarterback. Luckily, they've performed pretty well this year. You know, Murray, they contained him really well in that second. And whatever the Seahawks defense ate or did before the game against the Rams 2 weeks ago, do it again. If it was eating your Wheaties, what if you had a protein, whatever you put in your protein shake, whatever you did, if you're on Seahawks defense, do that again. Because, boy, they could really use that performance again, especially that with the best example for me of that contain was that goal line stand. I mean, that was just incredible. They clearly tried to get outside, and Jamal Adams didn't let that happen, and they tried some stuff inside. So that was a great example, and I think the Rams especially are going to be looking at that series over and over and over again, saying, if we get in this situation again, what can we do differently, or what can we go off of the plays we did? And the Seahawks are definitely going to have to be ready for that adjustment.
Yeah, they're going to have to be ready because you know McVay is going to look at some of those plays, and he's going to come up with some counters. How can we – make that aggressiveness from Jamal Adams, make him pay for that a little bit? Or how can we manage the fronts that they're showing us? You know, McVay is going to have really gone to the whiteboard on this or whatever they're using in our virtual age here, but they are going to have stuff schemed up to be able to counter what the Seahawks did in week 16. So it's going to come down to adjustments for both sides, particularly with the Seahawks on defense, with the uncertainty of who's going to be playing quarterback. That adds a different wrinkle going into this wild card game. When we come back for the third quarter, it's time for Bold Predictions Wild Card Edition. You and I are going to have some doozies on this one, Nick. I just have a feeling there's going to be some really bold predictions this week going into this playoff matchup between two bitter NFC West rivals. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Are you ready for some football? The college football championship game is quickly approaching, and the NFL playoffs are set to kick off next weekend. There is only one place that has you covered and one place we trust, betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDON for your 50% welcome bonus. The Seahawks will look to begin a potential Super Bowl run as they face the Rams in the wild card round, while Alabama hopes to capture another national title against Ohio State among a bevy of big matchups this weekend. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on the action. Don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Blue Friday edition, Wild Card Eve here on the podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, joined by Nick Lee. Wednesdays on Locked On NFL take a dive into the future of your favorite NFL franchises. Tony Wiggins and James Rapien are joined every week by a Locked On draft expert to talk prospects in the upcoming draft and young NFL players fresh in the league. Did your team have a big rookie performance this week, or are they shaping up to have a premier draft pick in the 2021 draft? Get everything you need Wednesdays on Locked On NFL. Subscribe to Locked On NFL wherever you get your podcasts. It's time for some bold predictions, wild card edition. The Seahawks hosting the Rams at Lumen Field. This is going to be a really exciting wild card weekend. I don't know that I necessarily enjoyed adding a seventh playoff team to the fold, but at the same time, it does give you now, instead of four games, we have six games coming up this weekend. Seattle playing on Saturday. Let's talk those bold predictions here, Nick. Let's start on the offensive side of the football. What is your first bold prediction for the Seahawks Rams contest?
Well, I'm gonna start a little light, a little maybe cliche, and I'm gonna go Aaron Donald will be held without a sack. I think the game planning and the offense will find ways to limit his impact. I'm not saying that the Seahawks won't give up any sacks, but I think Aaron Donald will be a focal point of where they want to protect, and Aaron Donald will be held with zero sacks in this game. The guy that's only Chandler Jones has sacked Russell Wilson more than Aaron Donald has on Russell Wilson's career. But I just think how the game's going to go with the run. Hopefully the run game will be established well, and some of those quick passes where if Russell Wilson doesn't get too greedy downfield, where you take the check downs, you take what the defense gives you underneath, some getting rid of the ball quickly, that'll limit Aaron Donald's impact.
I'm going to go with a tight end for my first bold predictions here. This is why you signed Greg Olsen in February. Yes, his overall production wasn't what a lot of fans hoped for in the regular season. He battled a foot injury in the second half. He didn't play last week because they wanted to give him the final week off just to ensure that he was healthy. I think Greg Olsen is going to have maybe his best game as a Seahawk at the perfect time. I have Greg Olsen eclipsing 50 receiving yards in this game and catching a critical touchdown in the second half to help the Seahawks pull off a slim victory over their NFC West rivals. We saw Jacob Hollister have a big game in week 16. I think Greg Olsen is the one at the tight end position that comes through in the clutch for the Seahawks in this rematch.
Another bold prediction I have DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett will combine for 200 receiving yards.
Whoa. Metcalf,
I know, especially with Jalen Ramsey. I respect him, but DK Metcalf is also not some average receiver that Jalen Ramsey can lock down for the entire game. DK Metcalf is an elite receiver, and Tyler Lockett loves playing against LA. And I think these two guys, especially Metcalf, is due for a huge game. Maybe it's 80, 120, 100 each, 150 or and 50. I don't know. I don't know what the combination will be between the two, but I think DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett could have sneaky, really good games. And maybe the Rams are hell bent on stopping the run, or one, you know, they really try to take away DK Metcalf, so Tyler Lockett goes off for 150 yards or something like that. But those two will combine for 200 yards in a big day for the passing game.
Yeah, and I'm going to go with the offensive line as well. I'm going to make it a more, you know, just in general rather than just looking at Aaron Donald. Obviously, that would be an accomplishment if you hold him without getting to Russell Wilson for a sack. But I think with this front line, having all five of its starters back for this game, they are 5-0 in previous games when they've had all five of these guys in the lineup together. They've averaged 36-plus points per game. I think it is going to make a huge impact on their ability to protect Russell Wilson. We have seen him get battered in both games that they have played against the Rams. They've been able to get a lot of pressure on him. I think the Seahawks offensive line is going to give up three or fewer sacks to Russell Wilson. And some of our listeners might be thinking, well, that doesn't seem like a very bold prediction. If you go back and look at the Seahawks historically against the Rams, if they give up three or less sacks in a game against them, it is a very rare feat. Ever since Aaron Donald arrived, this defensive line has just ravaged the Seahawks year after year. But I think in this game, the offensive line is going to step up to the table, and they are going to have a fantastic performance. And I think that's going to be a big part of the Seahawks being able to find a way to win this game against a very good Rams defense.
On defense, Corbin, I'm going to go really bold here in the first one. DJ Reed. We've all been really high on DJ Reed. I'm pretty high on DJ Reed. I'm excited for his future prospects and what he's become with the Seahawks now that he's healthy, and hopefully he stays that way. I'm going to say that DJ Reed has more touchdowns than Cooper Kupp in this game. Now, I'm not saying he's going to, you know, score four touchdowns or anything. Maybe the Seahawks defense is really good at limiting Cooper Kupp and keep him out of the end zone. And DJ Reed has pick six, fumble return, or heck, a return touchdown. He's been electric in the return game, and the fact that you just know that he's got that extra gear, that if he can just get a couple blocks and wiggle loose, he can wiggle and get downfield for a touchdown in the return game. So, yeah, DJ Reed, more touchdowns than Cooper Kupp. I'm going big on that one.
I don't know if I can touch that one on the boldness scale, but – I'm going to stick with the secondary for my first defensive one. Quandre Diggs is going to continue his mastery of Jared Goff, or even if Wolford plays in this game. I've got Quandre Diggs getting two interceptions for the second time in his career in a game against the Rams. He did it last year when they played in LA. I think he gets two picks in this playoff game, and I think the Seahawks are going to turn both of those into points, which ends up being a deciding factor in the final outcome.
And for my next one, I'm going to cheat and not quite go defense, but more special teams. I predict that a special teams play will decide the game, whether that's a last second field goal or a field goal block, a muffed punt that swings the game and for one team, or like I mentioned with DJ Reed, a return touchdown. But I think the Seahawks special teams has been electric and really, really sound this year. Jason Myers has been automatic. Michael Dixon back to his Pro Bowl form of his rookie year. I predict that a special teams, maybe not the last play of the game, but just a play that will decide where the momentum goes in this game to decide the winner will happen on special teams.
Now I'm just going to go with another statistical one on the defensive line. I've been talking about him all week. Rasheem Green has really come on strong the last 3 weeks, and he had two quarterback hits in that first matchup back in week 16. I think this time around, he isn't just going to get to the quarterback and hit him. I think he's going to get sacks. I've got Rasheem Green equaling his season total. He had two sacks the entire year. I have him getting two sacks in this game, and I think one of them is going to be on a fourth